Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. On the 10th anniversary of the Apple iPhone, we go inside the secret history of the one device that changed the world. Today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell, Brian Merchant, senior editor of Motherboard, which is Vice's science and technology outlet. He's the founder and editor of Terraform, Vice's online fiction outlet. He's done a full excavation, and I mean literally, of the iPhone, the deepest dive by any journalist or outsider, for that matter. And that new book is The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. Welcome from L.A., Brian.
Thanks so much for having me.
And this is kind of the first deep dive, particularly into the supply chain. Just to give folks an overview of the travels you did, your methodology.
I kind of figured that to tell the whole story of the device itself, of the iPhone, which is now, you know, arguably the most successful product, the best-selling product of our time, I decided to take two tracks, essentially. And on one track, I would tell the story of how the device was conceived and developed within Apple as a consumer technology. On the other track, I thought it would be an interesting endeavor to take sort of a more holistic look at the device itself, you know, really sort of break it down to its component parts and even go as far as I could to the elemental level to see what it's made of, and then sort of follow that assembly line from component part. You know, you have things like the Corning Gorilla Glass that makes the screen, and you have multi-touch sensors, and it's all made of stuff. So I, you know, looked at the mines where it comes from. I looked at the manufacturing operations that is required to put together this really intricate, really sort of impressively compact device. And then I looked at sort of the whole array of technologies that are behind the screen that we don't tend to think about so much, and hopefully providing a full soup-to-nuts portrait of how this device works and where it comes from.
It's an amazing story, and you visited every inhabited continent, took 8,000 photos, 200 hours of interviews, went through three different iPhones, including a black market iPhone we'll talk about. Now, you can't even open this device generally. It's you're not supposed to. And we'll talk about the labor conditions and things like that. Did you come away with a feeling that Apple is morally or ethically compromised any worse than all the consumer electronic firms that are, you know, getting their stuff from other parts of the world? And personally, are you anti-Apple, agnostic, pro-Apple? Where do you stand?
You know, actually, Apple is probably one of the better actors in the industry, if only marginally so. So it's I'm certainly not anti-Apple.
Mm-hmm.
What I was trying to do is use the iPhone, you know, this ubiquitous sort of product as sort of a stand-in, as sort of like a portal to look at how these sort of supply chains work and sort of how, you know, these are functioning on, as you said, every different continent. And the reality is, whether or not you're making an iPhone or, you know, a big screen TV or, you know, a laptop, behind these gadgets, you know, is mined in unsavory, sometimes downright deadly conditions, and it on the laborers. And Apple's not worse than its competitors, but it is also perhaps the most influential, most powerful company in the space. So it has more influence and perhaps more capacity to, you know, enact changes to its supply chain. So it's a little bit of a push and a pull. I wouldn't say I'm anti-Apple. I would say that I think I'd encourage everybody to really kind of look at this element of the object that we use every day and sort of try to integrate that understanding, that reality, into the fact that we use these and we benefit from that labor every day. So how, what do we do with that? Maybe we push Apple to be a little bit more proactive on some of its standards. Maybe we ask it to do more thorough audits and that sort of thing. But it's not Apple who's the bad actor. It's the way that the sort of the industry is currently sort of structured.
Interesting. You talk about there's been a billion of these phones sold. It's maybe one of the most profitable devices, 40% to 70%, I think you say. Do you think that, A, this is the biggest consumer product in history? And B, why do you think the phone companies, and you even say IBM had a smartphone Simon communicator in 1992, why do you think that they didn't get to deliver this and it came from an outside consumer company, computer
company?
Yeah,
it's a really interesting question. There are a lot of accounts that, you know, some Wall Street firms have tried to sort of break down the device and look at the different costs involved with making it. And Apple doesn't release a lot of information, so it's hard to say exactly what its profit margins are, but a lot of reports kind of show that they are pretty staggeringly high, and as you said, anywhere between 40-45% to, you know, upwards of 60%, depending on how you factor in the R&D costs and all of that. It is really interesting that it was ultimately Apple that sort of stumbled onto this magic formula. In a sense, IBM, as you said, and a number of other technology companies in the early 90s basically sort of wrote out the ingredient list. So if I'm describing the IBM Simon in a vacuum to somebody who hasn't heard of the iPhone or the IBM Simon either, and I'm saying, you know, okay, you've got this black rectangular device. It's got a touch screen. It's got apps that you touch the screen to open them up. You know, you can get more apps, you know, it makes calls, it has email, it can connect to the internet. It sounds an awful lot like an iPhone. The problem was is that the technology just wasn't there yet in order to make it function and behave and sort of seem like an iPhone. And that's the important thing that Apple really nailed, is it added this sort of signature user interface that's really just kind of a delight to use, you know, the swipe and you're pinching and zooming. And they really were able to harness sort of the evolved processor, which had, you know, reached a sweet spot, as one of the Apple engineers told me. The computer chips had just, you know, developed to a place where, you can, you know, around that time, they had gotten small enough and low power enough that they could slide into a phone-sized device and provide enough sort of horsepower, enough juice for the computer to work like it actually is. You know, it's an iPhone, it's called an iPhone, but it is actually a mobile computer. So you kind of had to wait to get these different things intersecting, you know, a fast enough computer, you know, a wireless network that was good enough to transmit data so people could, you know, make use of the online apps, and the industrial design had to be there, which is a big part with Johnny Ive and his, you know, famous team of designers were able to make it look really cool. So they got, you benefited from this sort of these intersectionalities that Apple's really brilliant software designers and industrial designers and engineers were able to seize on and create this great product.
All right, last couple of minutes here. What did you find to be the biggest surprise in your mind? Now, I know you make a point in the book that this is sort of a convergence of technologies more than an invention of technologies. And what surprised you the most? And does Steve Jobs come away with a different take as sort of a one-man cult figure?
You know, it's not even necessarily Steve Jobs' fault that we kind of perceive him this way, but he, you know, I don't think that he'd have any problem with it. But he certainly is a suitable figure for that sort of lone inventor myth that we just kind of tend to perpetuate, you know, whether we really want to or not. This, the myth of Edison, like, you know, working in his lab alone and getting the, you know, filament right for his light bulb, and aha, there it is, the invention. It's just a really compelling narrative, and really one of the things that surprised me was the extent to which the inverse was actually true. Sort of the complex, vast ecosystems of people and ideas that had to be pulled from to make this possible, to the point that, like, at a number of junctures in the history of the iPhone within Apple, Steve Jobs was actually, you know, outright hesitant or even opposed to the device itself. At one point, he said, he's like, I'm not just so sure about these smartphones. It seems like they might be something for this just the pocket protector crowd. Like, only geeks are going to want smartphones. And his executive staff kind of talked him into it. And yeah, at other points, he didn't want to do, you know, he didn't want to do a phone, he didn't want to get into the phone market for fear of, you know, mixing up with the telecoms, which were kind of, had controlled a lot of what handset manufacturers could make. So he did, there were all these hurdles and places where he doubted the viability of the ultimate product. But he, to his credit, on the other hand, he did, you know, listen to the right people. He grabbed the right ideas. He made a few of the key decisions at the key times. So, you know, at maybe when I went into this, I was actually more skeptical of his role than when I came out of it.
Interesting. You listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, or listen over the Internet. Access our archive of podcasts. In the next segment, we'll go inside the guts of the iPhone.
Biz Talk Radio is now available on Amazon Echo. Just add the Biz Talk Radio skills, then ask Alexa for the latest business news. You'll instantly get live, relevant information from the best business source, Biz Talk Radio. Alexa, open Biz Talk Market Tips.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-425-1023. That's
800-425-1023. I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions Now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back. Our guest, tech journalist, iPhone expert now, Brian Merchant. We're going to sort of take the cover off a little bit and look under the hood here. And by the way, how did you get the hood off anyway? And underneath, what does it look like in terms of, I know you said the battery takes up 50%. Give us just an overview of what it looks under the skin first.
You know, Apple really doesn't want consumers sort of taking the screen off ourselves. So what they've done is they have used sort of these proprietary screws called pentalobes that are, you know, it's a specific shape and they're very small, and you need a sort of a custom screwdriver to even use to get them off in the first place. So you have to go out and buy basically a specific tool set if you want to, you know, check out this product that you bought yourself. And something that Apple's done for a long time, you know, they don't like to have sort of, you know, sort of modularity at all. They don't like they don't like to give people the opportunity to sort of hack the devices. And that is another thing that comes from sort of Steve Jobs' mindset. He never wanted people to sort of tamper with his stuff that he designed because it was supposed to work and look and feel a certain way. Again, has pros and cons, and some people really like that approach, and some people push back against it, but so it is with the iPhone. Not being at the time any proficient gadget repair technician or anything, I decided to turn to some of the experts in the field, these guys from a great company called iFixit, who sort of their bread and butter is publishing these guides to tearing down gadgets and repairing them. They're all about trying to educate people to get them to know how to fix these things up themselves. You know, 9 times out of 10, if your phone's not working right, if it's slow or sluggish, it could be something as simple as just your battery's running out of juice. So you can swap out the battery. You know, you can get a battery, you know, for just $30 or something, slide it back in, and it will work like new sometimes. So they're all about that sort of transparency and that sort of educational side. So they have a headquarters in San Luis Obispo in California, and I went to their HQ, and they sort of walked me through it. And it was this really interesting experience of taking the thing off for the first time. If you're not a gadget geek and you don't sort of know what all these components are, it can be a little, you know, surprising, but so much sort of compact circuitry and so much technology is crammed into this slender profile. As you said, 50% about of the space is the lithium ion battery. That's, you know, they've really tried to squeeze everything else down around it, but battery technology is one of those stubborn things that they haven't really found out a way to condense much more than they have already. So you have other things like digitizer cables that sort of, you know, sweep across and down the side, and they connect to the screen so you can sense finger movements. You have sort of a double-sided motherboard that sort of lodges a lot of the chips that, you know, there's a bunch of different microchips that do a number of different functionalities, the biggest of which is is the ARM processor, which is another story in the book about how that came to be. It's a special kind of chip architecture that is now more widely used than Intel, which is Intel still perhaps has more name recognition because it's an American company with a mythology and history that's closely bound up with Silicon Valley. But ARM is now sort of the biggest game in town, and it's one of the things that makes the phone possible too.
Interesting. Let's talk now about Foxconn, the factory where these things are produced, because you were the first person, I think, to sneak in, certainly the first journalist.
It has an entire sort of geography as a city would. You have sort of like the docks, and people actually that we interviewed called it the docks on the outside, where people were working on more sort of manual labor, sort of more, it was a little less regulated. And as you move into the center, there's sort of gentrified like a city would. You have things like a 7-Eleven. There's a 7-Eleven that only Foxconn factory workers ever see or go into, and there's cyber cafes and all that. But of course, it's organized around these giant sort of cell block looking buildings that are really just towering structures that house these assembly lines of hundreds and hundreds of people. You know, your iPhone kind of feels like this sleek, sealed together, this artifact, this gadget, this kind of almost this cutting edge thing. But of course, it's made by hand. It's put together by, this really intricate, really sprawling assembly line where you have workers who are doing kind of the same repetitive function day in, day out for 10, 12 hours a day, kind of, you know, soldering on a tiny little component or just wiping the glass clean and then on to the next station. And the sum total impact of this kind of nature of work, combined with the fact that there's a really aggressive management style where if you mess up, you are liable to be yelled at publicly. You know, your supervisor can have you stand up, and at the end of the day, they'll say, this is why we didn't make quota. It's you's fault. You know, you really let everyone down, and you'll have to publicly apologize. And for a lot of people who have moved from perhaps more rural parts of the country to work in this crazy sort of high-stress, very mind-numbing environment, it causes some psychological distress. It can be very problematic. So that is what we kept hearing when we would interview the workers who are on the ground there, that there's just this ghost of death there as a result. It's been normalized. You just expect...
You also went into the Bolivian mines looking at where they get mined tin and gold, where they use child laborers, and that just the picture there was scary. Quickly, as we go down, you in the black market, you said that they can reverse engineer and build one of these things in 30 minutes for $50.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting that just a few miles away from that manufacturing plant that I was just describing, there is sort of the aftermarket for these things, for phone parts, and, you know, any number of things can happen to your iPhone when you're done with it, but one of the things that usually happens is it ends up in waste fill, or if you're more proactive, you drop it off to a recycler, and these streams often end up back to China, where people will buy up these parts, and I did, I tracked down this black market inside the city of Shenzhen, again, just miles away from where they're made, where you have bits and pieces of iPhones, sort of, you'll have a stall selling all camera parts or all batteries or just the motherboard. So I just thought it would be a fun experiment to ask one of the vendors there how much I could, how far we could drill down, and could he just kind of build me an iPhone from scratch? And he said, sure. I gave him $50. I got the sense he would have done it for less, and he just went from stall to stall, picked out a battery, picked out a camera, picked out a motherboard, picked out a casing, brought it back to his work desk, and just screwed it together for me right before my eyes.
And we'll look at Apple's Manhattan Project next.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more. And we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction, Hope, and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction, Hope, and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Brian Merchant, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. That's his new book that's just out, and I'm calling it a Manhattan Project, but it said that the actual development of this broke the rules of product management in every single way. Talk about the product management process.
So it was really kind of a really interesting model, and as that employee did tell me, it did break a lot of the rules, or sort of the conventions, at least, of how these things are usually done. And that's in part because it came together so organically, and it began, you know, with this sort of investigation into sort of user interface and what the future of that was going to look like. And once the decision was made to do a phone and to use this sort of advanced touchscreen, multi-touch-based technology as the centerpiece, then you had some of the software engineers sort of coming over to their neck of the woods to work very closely and to collaborate. And so it began once it was an official project, once Steve Jobs was sold on the idea of doing a phone, which took some, you know, serious convincing to get him there. But once he did, it really did become this top secret thing within Apple, where there was one sort of building in the Cupertino headquarters, the 2 Infinite Loop, in a floor just above the industrial design studio, that they started really sealing it off. There were badge readers. You could only get in if you, you know, were disclosed on this particular project. And you'd have the managers, who Jobs only allowed the managers to hire people for this project within Apple, not without, not outside. So, but they could choose anyone that they wanted within the company. So they would come to an engineer's office, and they'd sit down and say, listen, there's this top secret project going on. I think you'd be perfect for it. We know you're a star at this company. Unfortunately, I can't tell you anything else about it, but you just have to tell me whether or not you're on board by the end of the day, or we're going to find someone else. Oh, by the way, it will probably mean giving up your weekends, your nights, your, you know, holidays. You're just going to have to do nothing but work on this for the next couple of years. And somewhat remarkably, they got a lot of people to say yes. They got a lot of people turned them down, too. But they headed over to what would soon be called the Purple Dorm, because the iPhone's code name was the Purple Project. It was, in those quarters, this really intensive, round-the-clock effort to mix this brand-new multi-touch sort of input system to sort of Apple's classic software design that's very friendly, you know, user-focused, intuitive design. So these guys were just kind of bouncing ideas back and forth, coming up with design flourishes, shooting other ones down, figuring out, you know, a lot of these mechanisms that had to be built for the first time, like slide to unlock or a way to turn on your phone if it's all screen, right? You need to figure out these brand new sort of solutions to problems that hadn't even existed yet.
Now, there's politics involved here, kind of teams somewhat pitched against each other. And if I look at it, there was kind of one approach was to sort of upscale the iPod into a phone, and the other was sort of to downscale the Mac computer in down into a phone. Is that about right?
Yeah, no, that is right. And that sort of arose because at the time, you know, in 2004-2005, the iPod had really taken off and it was the hit product. It was maybe at its peak around then. I think 2005, the iPod was even maybe half of Apple's entire revenue. So it was something that the company had a keen interest in sort of protecting and sustaining. So one of the reasons they actually decided to do the iPhone, one of the key sort of prongs of the argument that eventually swayed Jobs, was that cell phones were getting smarter and they were going to be able to hold MP3s. So pretty soon people were going to be ditching their iPods because they didn't want to, you know, have two devices in their pockets if they could just carry the one. So in order to sort of protect their market share, they started exploring fast ways to get, you know, a phone to the market. So, and one of the first things that seemed really obvious was to take this design and this product that had already proven a smash success, the iPod, and see if you could just graft a phone onto it. If you can just get it to make phone calls, then you have, you know, you've got the brand recognition, you have, it's already phone-sized, it's already sort of, you know, you don't have to do a whole lot of legwork in launching a whole brand new product line. Unfortunately, it's just really, there's no good way to make a phone call from a rotary dial wheel. Yeah, you remember that iPod used to have that click wheel. So for a while it was, Jobs was like, okay, Tony Fadell, who ran the iPod team, he said, if you guys can get this, you know, iPod phone to work, then we'll run with this. But meanwhile, on the software side, you had the other guys squeezing down, as you said, sort of a Mac operating system based architecture onto the phone too, because if they could get that to work, which there was no, you know, guarantee that they could do that either, because they were just, you know, basically taking the contents of an entire, you know, laptop or desktop computer and trying to squeeze it down into something that would fit in a phone. And they were even smaller than they are now. The first round of, you know, iPhones, the first model was much smaller. So it did become sort of this competition, and their politics did get involved, especially between sort of the managers of the project. Scott Forstall was the chief of the software effort, and Tony Fadell was the head of the iPod phone, and then the hardware effort. So there was this sense of, you know, each team wanted to get their product to market.
Now, Jobs' management style, this obsessive secrecy, not really empowering people, was that a negative impact on the project, or just his intensity spurred everything?
I think it's another instance of, you know, being a double-edged sword where it's hard to argue that it wasn't effective when it ended up, you know, at least playing some role in producing the most, you know, successful consumer product of recent memory. But it is, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who are aggrieved by it, who felt that it wasn't necessary, that people could have worked together even better had there been more transparency. It did serve to kind of deteriorate morale in quarters of the company that weren't involved in it. As the project ramped up, it became very clear that there was something special going on that they weren't a part of. So a lot of people just kind of, you know, felt bad about that. And meanwhile, people who even were working on the hardware couldn't see what the software guys were doing because it was so secretive. And yeah, that caused some resentment for sure, because they're like, okay, well, we're working on this thing too. You know, we need to know what it's going to look like in order to, you know, do some of this hardware design and make sure we've got the right stuff. But Steve Jobs was so paranoid about that user interface, which he would later call magical, you know, that multi-touch and the push to zoom and all that, that he was just worried that if that got out, they would, you know, the jig would be up.
You know, this is such glamour stuff, this building, being able to be on the team to build this, but the human toll you talk about is pretty unbelievable. I mean, I think it's 36 deaths of folks that worked, and that includes Jobs, obviously, divorce, health. What about the human toll?
That was a really remarkable element, too, and that people who were there, engineers and especially the engineers who were sort of tasked with making this thing happen, right? A lot of the software designers and the human interface designers were like, oh, you know, that it was just, you know, our job, and but they would have to come up with the ideas, and then you had this whole cadre of engineers who really, who was kind of like do or die, you have to make it happen or face Jobs' wrath. And a lot of them said, yeah, that was the most miserable time in my life, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. Like, we did it. You know, I got, you know, some of them frankly told me, you know, this, the iPhone is the reason that I'm divorced. It's that simple. It consumed my life to such an extent, and I let it consume my life to such an extent that, you know, it ruined my personal relationships with people that I was closest to. It is a powerful thing, and it is something to recognize, as another one of those inputs, as another toll of the device.
Now, as we finish up under a minute in this segment, you list the folks in these various groups, the design group, the hardware groups, Siri, whatever, and no one really ever heard of these guys before other than Johnny Ives. Was that because of Steve, or did it feel good that you've sort of released their anonymity?
Yeah. No, I mean, these guys deserve just as much credit, some of them maybe even more, as those two folks, guys like Boss Ording, Imran Chowdhury, Greg Christie, these designers, the Josh Strickon and Brian Huppy, the input engineers early on, these guys really sort of, from the earliest stages, cobbled together the idea and realized that they're some of the unsung heroes in technology of the last 25 years.
Our final national segment coming up, we'll look towards the future at Apple.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1769. 855-325-1769. That's 855-325-1769.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. Call 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. That's 800-223-0092.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-463-1749. 800-463-1749. That's 800-463-1749. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM19, Oregon DM80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC32.
Biz Talk Radio.
All right, our final segment with Brian Merchant, senior editor of Motherboard. But before we get into the finale here, do you have any inkling of the phone that's about to come out, which I've heard might be called X or 8? There's rumors of delays now, problems with the fingerprint recognition. Do you have a sense of what's happening there?
You know, whenever a new phone sort of approaches this point in its release cycle, you're going to get a lot of rumors and a lot of sort of he said, she said about what's actually going to be in the device. I think at this point it's safe to assume that indeed there's going to be a really slick-looking screen, OLED screen, that does sort of bend around the edges and gets rid of even more of the bezel. It's probably going to be a really slick-looking device. And there's been some pretty credible reports that they had a lot of trouble getting the fingerprint sensor to work on that screen, because one of the things that they're doing is they're going to finally get rid of the home button. Again, this is all speculation and all rumor sourced on supply chain stuff. But they were going to get rid of the button and turn it.
Why is it important to get? Why is it important to get rid of the button? I mean, is there any logic for that?
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it's important. I think it's just, you know, Apple is constantly striving to improve simplicity, to streamline, to, you know, they're one of the great minimalist product designer. So if there's no button, that's one less thing. It's just even more slick looking than before.
Any improvement in the battery life, you think, coming?
I would doubt it. Maybe marginal.
Yeah. See, those are things that really matter, because the batteries burn through so quickly. They're going to open a data center in China, linked to a government-owned company. Is that scary news?
It's not that scary. I think it's just another continuation of the trajectory that we've been on. China is a big X factor for Apple. It's a huge prospective market that they, you know, really have not been as people would say they haven't been aggressive enough in
right.
trying to win it. So they're doing a number of things, perhaps to curry favor, perhaps to make sure that its relationships with the government remain good. So they lost a lot of their market share there to sort of knockoff phones. There's a lot of like regional smartphone makers that we've never heard of, that people are using instead of iPhones. It's still like this top tier status symbol in China. Most people don't have iPhones.
Do you think that, you know, now we have an addictive product? It's a fashion device, right? As opposed to a commodity. Do you think that at some point commoditization is inevitable? And historically, Apple shrunk down to like 2 or 3% market share in the computer side of their business, the Mac or whatever, to be able to keep their pricing profitability umbrella. How do you see that unfolding?
Yeah, no, I think that that's, you know, underway already. I think here in the U.S., it is already starting to become a little bit more of a commodity than as you said, a fashion object. It's something that it is become kind of standardized. You know, it's really not that exciting for most people. You've got a black rectangle that looks a little bit different than last year's black rectangle. It's becoming sort of just, you know, just a shape. You know, I kind of liken it to what happened with maybe even the automobile, where like the shape, the sedan isn't an exciting concept anymore, but you can still have cool variations and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it is sort of going to be interesting to see what, you know, what handset makers start to do to sort of try to get their phones to stand out, because we do have this really homogenous market now.
Tim Cook, do you think he is the right man? And in the book, you kind of imply or that you uncovered, he sometimes he opens his email with some sort of a Windows device, right?
yeah, that was kind of a funny aside that I included there. Yeah, I was using an email tracker to see if they were actually logging my responses at all, and it turns out they were opening all my emails. They just weren't getting back to me.
Yeah.
So, Tim Cook, both, I think all three times that I emailed him, either him or whoever his email gets forwarded to was opening up on a Windows machine. So, do with that information what you will, but it is the funniest.
It's kind of scandalous, yeah.
yeah.
Do you think that Apple is going to continue to need revolutionary products, and is the next one, is it going to be in the driverless space?
Yeah, kind of part and parcel with what I was saying earlier about sort of the iPhone becoming sort of a sedan-like rote product that is kind of at the, you know, the center of our daily routines, but isn't that exciting. I wouldn't be surprised to kind of see just that become the case with Apple. It's, you know, it has done very well under Tim Cook by maximizing sort of its revenue streams and by sort of, you know, getting the operation side really sort of maximized. And I don't think it needs another innovation necessarily, but I mean, that's just kind of a thing that's in vogue to say, you know, because it would be exciting, and people who love Apple would love them to come out with a great new revolutionary product. But, you know, they're the biggest, most profitable, most valuable company going right now.
So interesting. So you think if they, for instance, capitalize to the full extent on the Apple Store and consolidating content and all that stuff, that they might not have to reinvent anything else?
Well, you know, eventually they probably will. But, you know, people always ask me, like, well, what's next? What's the great next thing? And my answer is kind of boring. It's like, in 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a black rectangle of some, you know, variation in our pocket. And it's a good chance that it's going to be Apple that's still running it and reaping the most profits off.
That is interesting. Do you think that Siri will get into AI or even emotional EQ, emotional intelligence stuff? How far are they going to be able to take that out?
Yeah, I spoke with Tom Gruber, who's one of the architects of Siri, and he's still working on it at Apple. And that was the aim from the very beginning, was to try to get it to be more emotional, more personable, funnier, more interactive, more conversational. So it's right now they've kind of pivoted to doing more of the deep learning stuff that's in vogue, just sort of, you know, harvesting or tapping vast pools of data to try to, do what, like, say, Google is doing with neural nets and so forth. We could see more of that. Like, it's Amazon clearly found a great use case for that with the Alexa. I remain a little bit skeptical to see how deeply we actually want this integrated into our daily lives when we're sitting at the office or walking down the street. You know, is voice command sort of the best interaction tool? Like, I don't know. Certainly there's going to be more. We'll see some interesting stuff.
All right, last question, just like a one-word answer. Life after Steve Jobs, are Apple's best days ahead or behind?
Depends on how you...
No, ahead or behind?
I'd say ahead.
Good, interesting. Thanks to Brian Merchant. The book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone, and it is a fascinating literal excavation, as I said. Thanks to Brian for giving us a full hour. Thanks to our national audience for listening, and we'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Camp.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.